You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Wednesday, January 5th, 2022, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb, and coming up on today's episode, we have our first, you know, somewhat active big leaguer who is on the podcast. Thomas Eshelman, who has spent the last three seasons with the Orioles as both a starter and a relief pitcher, is going to join the pod today for a great conversation about his baseball career, his time with the Orioles, and much, much more. We're going to get into plenty of different topics with Thomas Eshelman, talk about his major league debut with the O's after getting traded there, his success in 2020, a bit about his struggles in 2021. We'll talk about his free agency and where he sees himself next. Then we'll talk about some other things in the baseball world. We will talk about being down in a major league bullpen. We talk about his fantastic college career. We talk about how he feels about some of the new rules in baseball and many, many other things in between on this conversation with Thomas Eshelman. So we'll get to that in just a second, but first, just got to thank you for making Locked On Orioles your first listen of the day. Locked On Orioles is free and available on all podcast listening platforms. And remember, only Orioles pod out there you can get 3 days a week, even in the offseason, even during a lockout, and 5 days a week during the season as well. Make sure to like, follow, subscribe to the podcast wherever you can. Give us a 5-star rating if you listen on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. 5-star rating really helps out the podcast. So we're going to jump right into it here on today's episode of Locked On Orioles, as we've got Thomas Eshelman on the show, who was former second-round pick of the Astros back in 2015, was traded a couple of times, and finally acquired by the Orioles back in June of 2019, and the O's brought him to the big leagues. He's played for three organizations, but the Orioles, the only team he's pitched for in the major leagues, has appeared in the big leagues in each of the last three seasons with Baltimore, and overall in 98 and a third innings, he has a 5.77 big league ERA with the Orioles over the last three seasons. And the 27-year-old right-hander Thomas Eshelman joins us right now to talk about his time with the Orioles, his baseball career, and much, much more. Great conversation here with the current big leaguer, as the former Orioles right-hander Thomas Eshelman joins the podcast. All right, so we welcome Thomas Eshelman into the podcast. Of course, right-handed pitcher for the Orioles for the last three seasons, currently a free agent during this lockout. First of all, Thomas, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so first I got to ask, you know, I am here in snowy Baltimore. I know you are living it up much better on the West Coast at the moment, but what has life been like for you during the lockout this offseason?
It's kind of normal, actually, just kind of trying to keep the same routine as I would on a normal off season. Just kind of making sure I'm checking in every once in a while to see how the progress is going, which doesn't seem like it's a whole lot right now. But just trying to make sure to stay ready, just kind of like the whole COVID situation we got to endure 2 years ago. So just making sure I'm ready, and whenever they say it's time to go, make sure I'm prepared for that.
Yeah, when you're a guy who's, you know, not directly one of the union representatives and isn't directly involved in this kind of stuff, like how much do you check in? How much do you let it get to you? Because I know the closer we get to February and March, you know, the more everybody starts to worry about this. So how much do you kind of check in?
It's the union does a good job of keeping us informed through their app and everything. Also, my agent's been doing a really good job as far as what's going on, what we're arguing for, and all that kind of stuff. So just as they do a good job with the representatives that they have in place as far as what's going on, what to expect. And but usually it's kind of up to what they decide on and what comes of the upcoming seasons and so forth.
Yeah, we're hoping we get all 162. We're hoping things get back to normal pretty quickly, and also hoping the players union can get some wins on their side as we head into 2022. But Thomas, I wanted to go back first to kind of your career starting with the Orioles back in 2019, when you were acquired by Baltimore right in the middle of the season. What were those first thoughts? You know, because you had not been to the big leagues yet when you heard you were heading to Baltimore.
Yeah, I was excited. I mean, I know like this is that was my third rebuilding organization. I was drafted by Houston in 15 when they're in the rebuild. And then I was with Philadelphia for 4 years while they're in the rebuild. So me being in another rebuild organization, it's kind of humbling because they know that I can be a piece that could be potentially useful for them in the future to hold time until the prospects get there. But it was a thing for me to be happy about for an opportunity to pitch in the big leagues. And I was given that throughout the past three seasons, parts of it. So it was something that I will always cherish with the Baltimore, was them giving me my opportunity to pitch and play at that level. And so I was excited to be a part of this group.
Was it something you thought about pretty initially, knowing that Mike Elias had obviously, you know, played a part in Houston and then he was in Baltimore and going to acquire you, or did you kind of put those pieces to the puzzle together a little bit later?
I did it. I put it together later. I honestly didn't think about it at all. There's so much movement in this game that you can't really keep track of it. But once I got traded for, I immediately saw Mike's name as the GM. So it was kind of funny because full circle of being drafted by him and then being traded for through him. So it was something that obviously I was happy for because he believed in me. He believed in my talents to potentially help him with bridging this gap between the rebuild and what it's about to become in the next couple of years. So it was something that it was special for me.
Yeah, he obviously, you know, knew a lot about you from drafting you, and to be able to go kind of pluck a player out of AAA and get him to the big leagues. And so I did want to ask you about, you know, you go to Baltimore and pretty quickly you get that big league debut. Now, you know, I don't know if it's the best stadium to have your debut in, to have it at the Trop, but I just wanted to know if you wanted to share kind of any memories from that day.
So I like the Trop, actually. The Trop is definitely it's a debate within the players as far as whether or not it's a good stadium or not. And I obviously have a little bit of a little different situation as far as placing my heart for that field. But it was funny. My wife, now wife, it was girlfriend at the time. She was flying out to see me in Norfolk, and I got the call on Saturday that I was going to start in Tampa on Monday. So I told her, she had a rough travel day to Norfolk. So I told her, hey, we're going to have to get another flight down to Florida. And she goes, are you hurt or something? I was like, no, I'm going to make my debut. So we actually flew down to Tampa together on Sunday night and went and had a dinner with my agent. And then on Sunday night, I was just fully expecting butterflies and not being able to sleep and everything. But having her there was definitely a huge part for me. To keep me kind of comfortable and prepared for what was about to happen. And then that first inning was rough. It was a long inning. And then I settled in after that. And just the whole atmosphere about it, them saying making his major league debut and everything was just awesome. Something that, like, it's truly something you can't put into words because it's something that you dream about as a little leaguer. And once you get to that position, you're just in awe of what's going on. And but be able to have that, my family there and my now wife was cool because we went out and had a couple drinks afterwards, which was definitely necessary. And but it was definitely an awesome experience overall.
So you say it's a, you know, a big point of discussion among players, the Trop. Obviously, you're gonna like a little more having your. What do you think besides you making your major league debut there and pitching pretty well in your first game? Like, what is your key factor if you are on team? You know, you like Tropicana Field.
It's just different. I think that's obviously the first dome I played in, and then we played in Toronto, and also it's kind of half dome, but Seattle. They're just kind of open but closed, but it truly is like a dome, and it's AstroTurf, and it's just they blast the music there. It's just different. I will say Toronto is probably a little bit, they edge the Tropicana Field a little bit more, but just because they have a lot of fans that go to the game. Tampa doesn't quite get as much as Toronto does, but the lights inside the stadium, they put it on the roof and everything like that. So it definitely is a different experience. And I think that's why I like it.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of dive into, you know, you as a pitcher, because you get through that 2019 season. I know you had to pitch in a bunch of different roles for a team that, I mean, was just looking for arms. It felt like, I know, at the end of that 2019 season, and the 2020 season was different because, you know, you had your best year in the majors so far. It felt like the Orioles as a team, you know, the bullpen, there were some more defined roles for some guys. So what do you think went well for you and was working on the hill in 2020? I mean, 35 innings, you had a 3.89 ERA and you succeeded in multiple different roles.
I think in 2020, it was kind of solidified as to what I wanted to do or what I needed to do for the team. And I was comfortable with knowing what was potentially, I mean, that role is different because you don't know when you're going to the game. You don't know if you're going to go into the first or the seventh or the eighth, if we're getting blown out or we're blowing out somebody. So it's definitely mentally draining on you as when you're going to pitch. But I think knowing that I had that role locked up throughout the entire year was something that I was able to be comfortable with. And I was able to create my routines and understand what the team needed from me in each role that I was set in. So I thought I was prepared. I thought I had a good off season going into that, and it translated onto the field.
So we'll get back to our conversation with former Orioles right-handed pitcher Thomas Eshelman in just a second. But first, let's talk about Built Bar. And it's the new year, so that means New Year's resolutions. And if yours is about getting fit or eating healthier, make sure you include Built Bar in your plan. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes just like a candy bar. You know what? Maybe it's even better than a candy bar. And it's got all of these amazing flavors that make it taste so good. Flavors like peanut butter brownie, salted caramel cookies and cream, and many, many more. And Built Bar tastes good, but also makes it easier to stick to your resolution. Because it tastes so good, you'll want to eat it. Unlike other protein bars, which can be chalky or waxy, or honestly just taste bad. Here's the thing, they taste great, but you still get all of the great nutritional value. Just 130 calories, just 4 grams of sugar, and 17 grams of protein in every chocolate-covered Built Bar. So to get in on these delicious and nutritious protein bars, go to Built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your order. Again, that is promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. You may have made one relief appearance in your minor league career, but you were basically a starter through and through. So how much work did it take to transition into, I know you were in kind of that long relief slash swing role for a while. And, you know, it's a little easier transition than, you know, starter to one inning reliever, but how did that transition go for you? And was there anything tough about at least the preparation for it?
Yeah. So in 2019, I did it a little bit, I honestly don't remember. I think we called somebody up and then I transitioned into that long role. But Waz actually helped me out when he was the bullpen coach at the time in 19. He helped me out, and then Broke obviously as well. Just to talk about a routine, how it's different. Like, you need like 5 or 6 standing up with the catcher, and then you got to get down and immediately get ready for that. So luckily, knock on wood, my arm's pretty loose and I'm able to kind of get ready pretty quick. Even when I do start, I kind of do a bullpen extended just for the routine of being a starter. But it's definitely different. You got to, like, I would say the biggest thing that's different is your mind. Like, you don't know when you're going in. And especially in that swingman / long relief role, it's... They always made fun of me in the bullpen because I was like, everyone was talking and all the 7th, 8th, and 9th guys are all like joking around, having a good time. And I'm like, can you guys shut up? I'm trying to pay attention here. Like, I wouldn't say like, I'm like, I saw a relief, but like once the starter goes through 6 and it's a close game, it's like, okay, it's the 7th, 8th, and 9th guys. But it's definitely a different experience, mentally, and I feel for guys that have to go through that, especially warming up on the mound. I think I've done that 3 times in my career now, but it's just it's a wild experience to do that in front of people, especially too.
Now, you mentioned that bullpen, and I did want to ask you, because We know the bullpen at the major league level is where you can find some of the biggest characters across baseball. So I know you've had a lot of teammates out there in the 3 years with Baltimore. So who kind of fits that role the best? Are there a couple guys that fit that role the best of the characters in the Orioles bullpen?
That's a tough question because the entire bullpen is a bunch of characters with them. I will say Darren Holmes keeps that bullpen glued, and he is probably one of the like leading characters of that pin. I mean, Tanner Scott always keeps it going. We got Lakins was always in there saying stuff. Our bullpen catcher Ben Carhart was there talking, and we had a fun time. We always had a interesting conversation going. A lot of hunters in there. So they would talk about hunting for a long time, and me being from West Coast, I would always try to make fun of them, like, "Oh yeah, I know what you guys are talking about." They're like, "Shut up!" It was a collective effort, but there was definitely like Lakins and Tanner Scott would always kind of be the ringleaders behind the conversations that we had going on in there.
Yeah, there can be times when you know you guys are with each other a lot, kind of away from the rest of the team, especially late in games out there in the pen. And as the game goes on, if you don't get used in that early long relief role, I'm sure the guys start to dwindle out there. And there's less and less bodies in the bullpen. Have there ever been times where, you know, maybe, you know, you didn't get used in long relief, but it's a close game and guys are getting used for one inning at a time. And, you know, do you ever find yourself like one of the only guys left down there?
Yeah, there was a couple times where I was like, there would be guys down. Like, I remember one time it was me and Paul Fry, and I think it was Caesar at one point. And we were sitting there, and I was like looking around. I'm like, wow, there's only three of us left, and you're down. So it's between me and Caesar. So it's definitely like, and the whole 10th inning rule, like, I commend those guys so much because that's such a difficult role to go into with a runner on second, no outs, and you got to basically either one, get them to go in there with just one run scored or no run. So it makes it difficult for those guys to go into those situations, but I mean, they did it time and time again. So, but yeah, it's that from like, all right, this could be the time when I do it. So, but it's interesting for sure.
Yeah. As a guy who's now pitching out of the bullpen more, how do you feel about that role and the potential of it? Of it staying, obviously, just for regular season play?
I mean, for me personally, like since I was that up and down guy in 19 and then kind of spurts with it last year, it kind of helps out with, I know this is kind of a controversial topic, but it helps out with not extending games to like our 19 in game that was in Anaheim that one year in 19. But like it kind of limits the guys' usage. And it kind of limits the they call it the taxi. It's like the up and down aspect of it. So it kind of benefits the relief pitchers a little bit, just as far as like the not as many usage of pitchers. So guys can stay up there longer and establish them better.
Yeah, you mentioned that game in Anaheim. I mean, it was awesome to see Stevie get a save, but on the other side of that, it's like, you know, how much does it hurt you guys to be playing that many innings in a West Coast game? Just in terms of the bullpen, but it's definitely right. an interesting topic, and it does keep the games from going, you know, 14, 15, 16 innings. Right. But you know, it's kind of the other side of, is it getting too far away from real baseball? But I did want to ask you just a little bit about 2021. Cause you know, you had a similar kind of role that you actually made the most starts of your career this year with six times you got the ball in the first inning. And I know the results just were not what they were in 2020. Did you feel something was different? Something was off? Just what do you feel like, you know, went kind of poorly for you at times this year that allowed you, you know, for the whole season in general, just to not obtain that same level of success?
Yeah, I wouldn't put it so much on anybody else besides myself for that, for the downfall of it. I think there were some things that were, mechanical that weren't there, and then also some things that were just kind of different. I know that this year there was a lot of like COVID trips, so there was guys on taxi squads like going out to West Coast just in case somebody did come down with COVID, and so I would go out to the West Coast and come back and have to build back up again, and it just kind of felt awkward for myself, but that's not something to put my hat on and blame it on that. But there was just times where simply stuff was just in the middle of the zone too much and flat and got hit. So it's something that I'm working on this offseason to truly clean up and create that angle better and aid to my ability to hide the ball better and create some more deception. So it was a difficult year, but something that I got through, something I was able to pitch in the big leagues and get called up again the second time. So just something that I definitely need to work on and clean up in some areas.
Now you talk about, you know, hide the ball better and what has made you good in your career. And I can't have you on and not ask about your college career, because I mean, in the last decade, like, let's be honest, you know, I'm a pretty big fan of college baseball, and you were one of the more impressive pitchers to follow in the college game. I mean, you know, if anyone listening doesn't know about Thomas's college numbers at Cal State Fullerton in 3 years there, I mean, he had a 1.65 ERA in about 400 innings. I mean, it was a ridiculous college career. So I got to ask you first, you walked 18 batters in about 370 plus innings. Like, do you remember those walks because they came so few and far between?
I remember the first one because there was a hit on me. Whoever could walk got the pot. And we were facing UC Santa Barbara, and they threw a party. When I walked, his name was Trinquan, and I walked him, and the entire like dugout erupted. And then I walked another guy because I shook to a 3-2 breaking ball, and I choked it, and it went up and out of the zone, and I got in the dugout, and I got ripped by our head coach. And afterwards, I thought to myself, I said, "That's my second walk in the year, and you're ripping me." So it was. But there was definitely, and then the third one, my freshman year too, was a 4-pitch walk. And then translated into my sophomore year, I walked three in one game, and I got in the dugout, and one of our junior outfielders came over to me, and he's like, "Hey, you feeling all right?" And I said, "Yeah, why?" He's like, "You walked three." I was like, "Yeah, dude, I don't know what's going on." Meanwhile, we won the game and we faced one of the better pitchers in the conference and we won. But yeah, it's definitely one of those things where college was a different animal. There was obviously the zones were a little bit bigger, and you were facing the best hitter of each college team in a professional lineup. So it was definitely a fun time, though, to be able to do that and like even think about it. I honestly couldn't probably fathom to do that ever again in my career, but it was definitely a good 3 years. Good 3 year run right there.
Yeah. Just to pitch the amount of innings you did and not even walk double digit batters in any of your three seasons was astounding. But, you know, I think the most impressive one was like true freshman, you know, freshman, 19 years old, three walks in, you know, almost 120 innings. Like when you come in the fall as a freshman, you know, and I know this is probably how you pitched in high school as well, but when you're looking at these hitters on the other side, and obviously you guys had a good roster in your 3 years there, like, does that become part of your plan? Like, I'm just going to be the guy with the mechanics and who's fine in the zone, and I'm going to get guys out like that.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me going into my freshman year was we had one of the like most ideal lineups in all of college baseball. We had Michael Lorenzen, who's now a hybrid guy with Anaheim. We had Chad Wallach, who's got some time with Miami and Cincinnati. We also had Chapman there, JD Davis, Carlos Lopez, who played in Mexico for a few years. We had tons of dudes, and it was an older team. And I just took it as like a – I had a good fall, and then I translated. I said in my mind, I'm like, if I can face these guys, I can face anybody. So it was definitely a good transition for me to go – from the winter and fall into the season and take what I did during the fall and winter into those games. And so it was just good for me. It was good for my mind to make me transition into the game easier and slow it down. So it was definitely a good thing to have and to build off of and into my sophomore and junior year as well.
I know the Cal State Fullerton program is well known across college baseball, but you know, maybe not as well known for people who don't, you know, as much follow the college game. Just what's that program like, and what did it mean to, you know, get to that College World Series?
It's hard-nosed. It's definitely a hard-nosed program. The alumni come back and they expect you to know who they are, and they expect you to know what the program's all about and what it's built off of, and who was at the helm, which was Augie Garrido, at the time when they transitioned into being what it is today. So actually I had the opportunity this offseason to write a foreword for a book by one of our alumni who asked me to write it. And it was an honor for me to be a part of that and be able to write a foreword for a book based off of our 1995 national championship team. So it's just all about history. It's all about knowing who played there, knowing what they built off of, what they did for the program, and all that kind of stuff. So that's why I've always taken that into each team I've played for, each organization. So like even with Baltimore, when getting able to talk to Brooks and Bugs and talking to Palmer and all those guys, like they built what Baltimore baseball is to the city and to the game in general. So I mean, and you can tell like those guys are just well liked throughout the entire city. I mean, I love when Brooks came around because everybody was like, I remember they put him on the big screen one day and everyone standed up and gave him standing O. So I just, that guy especially is one of the best dudes I've ever met in baseball. Like he genuinely cares about everybody. So just knowing that, and you can take that into your own game, and it makes it easier for your mental mindset of understanding like those guys respect who you are and respect what you do for the game. So if you can take whatever they give you and transition it into your game, even though he's a third baseman, he still gives you tidbits into what the hitter's looking for and all that stuff. And yeah, Dempsey's another one too. Dempsey being a catcher, he was fun to talk to. He's hard nosed as well.
So we'll get back to our chat with Thomas Eshelman in just a second. But first, let's talk about betonline.ag, because they've got you covered this holiday season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before as football continues its march through the college bowl season. Guess what? On Monday, we're so close to the national championship game, and of course, we've got the NFL playoffs coming up, the final week, week 18 this weekend, leading into the playoffs next week. And BetOnline remains your number one spot for not just football, but all the sports action this season. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today, and you can receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your 50% welcome bonus. From basketball, football, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. So don't wait to take advantage of all the new amazing offers available at betonline.ag, where the game starts. It's interesting to hear that, you know, same kind of culture, despite, you know, Fullerton versus Baltimore across the different coasts, that you've been able to experience that in your baseball career. I did kind of want to ask, you know, just a couple more things here. And one is, you know, what has been your biggest adjustment? West Coast guy and, you know, being in Baltimore for the past 3 years. And I know you're back in the West Coast now in the off season, but when you're in season over here, like what is the biggest adjustment for you?
The time zone, talking to my family back home, because my son was born in December preseason, and he had some health issues. So my wife had to stay back with him, but just being able to talk to them, I'd wake up at 10 on East Coast time and just FaceTime with them and being able to talk to them. And but yeah, that was a tough transition. I've been on the East Coast throughout my entire career. So that's probably the biggest one, but the pluses of it, I mean, you get to travel around and see all the history and all those ballparks and cities of Boston and New York and Baltimore. And to be honest, I don't think I'd ever travel to Baltimore if I didn't play there. And I'm glad I was able to experience the city, because it's honestly a really cool spot. And I'm glad I was able to play there, because I mean, it's got so much to it, and it's just, it was a cool spot.
Yeah. So speaking of kind of, you know, cities you get to travel to here, you're back into free agency. I know, you know, you had that briefly last year and the Orioles brought you back on a minor league deal. It's a different spot now in the lockout because you're kind of just in a waiting game. But was there, you know, any kind of murmurs before the lockout and kind of what are you looking for in your next deal, whether it be coming back to Baltimore or elsewhere once this lockout ends?
Yeah. So I'm just kind of, I mean, waiting for this lockout to get figured out. And then go from there. So I haven't obviously had any conversations with teams based off of the inability to. So I'm just trying to figure out what the next step's going to be and go from there. So I think this whole thing gives a little bit of, I mean, you can tell the guys knew it was coming because they all signed and they had good deals, but it's just kind of a different situation and just trying to figure out where the puzzle pieces will figure or get put in and go from there afterwards.
I mean, if you want to answer this, are you open to a reunion with the Orioles or do you think you'll see yourself somewhere else next year?
We'll see. I don't know. I mean, if they want me back, that'd be great. But I mean, if they want to go in a different direction too, I get it. So it's a business and unfortunately it's a business and a lot of things get different. Get put in different situations. So we'll see.
So I wanted to just end with a couple of rapid fire, Thomas, before I let you go. First, just in a couple words, like, you know, this is the big one for the fans to hear this answer. Like, what is it like to throw to Adley Rutschman?
It's amazing. I be ready for him. And that guy is going to be a solid player for Baltimore. And he's a grinder. He works. He's there early, gets his stuff in. He stays late and does his work. So he's going to be a good one. I'm excited to watch him succeed in the big leagues.
Yeah, fans are excited, hoping that he is the opening day catcher in 2022. Now, I know you're still, you know, among big league, you're still considered a young guy, but the even younger guys who you saw in Norfolk and even come up to Baltimore when you were, you know, back with the big league team at the end of the season, like who has impressed you among those guys? Cause there were a lot of young arms that the Orioles were really getting a look at, especially in Norfolk this year.
Yeah. I would say Kyle Bradish to me showed spots where he was just like, he was 97, 98 with a plus breaking ball and through strikes. So I think he's going to be a very good pitcher in Baltimore here. It'd probably come up midseason and help out the big league club. Kevin Smith, I like too. He's crafty. He's got that sink to his ball and he's got that slider and he gets amazing whiff rate on all of his pitches. And Bautista is definitely going to like turn some heads when he gets up there. He's like 99 to 100. And he just comes right after you with heater. So he's like the quiet guy. He's quiet Latin that will just come right after you. So I'm excited to see him watch him in the big leagues. I remember when he got called up and I was like, who's this guy? Because that's when I first got back after getting DFA'd. But like, just wait till you watch him throw. And I was like, all right. And then I watched him throw and I was like, that guy's the real deal. So I thought there was a chance he might get called up last year, but he's going to be good. He's going to be a good back end piece.
Yeah, and a big guy, you can't miss him. And he just looks like a closer. You watch him walk into the bullpen, and I just see him closing games in Baltimore at some point.
Yeah, he's like, he honestly looks like a mannequin. Like, his shoulders are like literally just, it's just an incredibly huge human being.
So the last thing I got for you, you know, we talked about your major league debut already in Tampa. So besides that, what is your favorite baseball memory? Could be anywhere from little league all the way up to the big leagues.
Favorite baseball memory. I would say pitching against Vanderbilt in that College World Series game. It was funny because he played with us for a little bit in 2020. It was Carson Fulmer and it was me versus him. And I was out doing them for a little bit until the rain came. And then it flipped on us. But I think that one was probably one of my favorite ones. And it got to face Dansby and a couple other big leaguers that trickled into that lineup as well. But, yeah, that one was probably one of my coolest ones, especially because they were defending national champions. And to have the ability to pitch against them in the first game of the College World Series was awesome for me.
Yeah, you were Brian Reynolds was in the lineup too, I think. You're still able to punch out eight. Against that Vandy lineup, which was just kind of the standard in college baseball for a while. And, you know, of course, in your last start there in college, you did not walk anyone, which I'm sure was a nice way to kind of cap off, you know, what you were known for in your career. But Thomas, thanks so much for taking this much time to talk about your career and your time with the Orioles. We wish you the best moving forward. Hopefully this lockout ends soon. We can see you catch on with either Baltimore again or another organization moving forward. But thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Connor. I appreciate it.
So our thanks again to Thomas Eshelman for joining the podcast. Great conversation with him to just talk baseball with a big leaguer, a guy who, you know, has thrown almost 100 big league innings over the last 3 years with the Orioles, and definitely a lot to take out of that conversation with Thomas. It was interesting to hear him talk about 2020 because you look what he's done. You know, he's pitched kind of a similar amount of innings in each of his 3 years, 2019, 2020, and 2021 with the Orioles. And, you know, really, to put it frankly, he was a really good pitcher, really, for Baltimore in 2020 when you break down what that team needed out of him and what he gave them. You know, it was fantastic, and it wasn't the same in his rookie year, and it wasn't the same in 2021. So obviously there is the question, will the O's bring him back on potentially another minor league deal into 2022? And obviously, you know, we will see where his baseball career takes him next. But he is a free agent currently during the lockout. We actually talked off air a bit about what his free agent status was. And it does seem like at the moment he is not eligible to sign during the lockout, even though he's not on a 40-man roster, because he finished the season with the Orioles on the 40-man roster at the end of the year. Then in the offseason, he was put on waivers and was released from the roster. That means he is still getting the union benefits. He is still in the union and therefore is not eligible to sign until the lockout ends. So once that happens, we'll see if he's coming back to Baltimore or if potentially he gets a deal elsewhere and potentially will pitch for the fourth organization in his career since being drafted in the second round out of Cal State Fullerton in 2015. And it was, you know, funny to hear about him, you know, taking a little while to put together that, hey, Mike Elias drafted him, Mike Elias trading for me. Definitely some great stories about his time at Cal State Fullerton. You know, I know a lot of Orioles fans know Thomas as kind of a, you know, a pitcher in the big leagues who was a former high draft pick who they acquired kind of for depth and, you know, known as the guy who's, you know, throwing 88 out there on the mound. But you got to remember, this is one of, you know, you could argue one of the greatest college baseball pitchers ever. I mean, in his 3 years, Cal State Fullerton, from 2013 through 2015, he was a true ace. He had an ERA under 2 every year. You know, he had single-digit walks in each of his 3 seasons there. And, you know, this was in, you know, every year he pitched over 100 innings and had less than 10 walks every year with good strikeout numbers. He was dominant at Fullerton. Really, the only reason he was picked in the second round, I think, was because of, I feel like, the velocity and the stuff was, you know, not that of, you know, a guy like Garrett Cole coming out of college on the West Coast. But with the numbers he had, if he had, you know, maybe a fastball that was 95, he's a top 10 pick, top 5 pick in the draft. And even with the stuff he has, he still went in the second round to Houston. I mean, he was an incredible college pitcher to watch. That was kind of right when I got into college baseball, you know, being a Maryland fan, eventually going to Maryland and, you know, working with the baseball team as their play-by-play broadcaster. That 2014 season was when Maryland got to the NCAA tournament for the first time in a long time, and that's when I really started following college baseball. And then 2015, which was Eshelman's junior year and final year at Cal State Fullerton, Thomas Eshelman and the Fullerton Titans actually came to the University of Maryland, played Maryland in a 3-game series in April in College Park, and I kind of vaguely remember him just dealing in that game. He was the ace for Fullerton. He pitched 8 innings. He actually got a complete game loss. Maryland beat him 2-1 that night, and he gave them everything they could handle, 2 unearned runs against him. But he went up against Mike Schworn, who was Maryland's ace and eventually played in the bigs with the Red Sox for a bit, who pitched 8 scoreless and struck out 13, and it was kind of an ace off. And then Eshelman talked about as well, you know, pitching in that College World Series in 2015 up against Carson Fulmer, who was kind of the guy that year in college baseball in 2015. But just what a college career he had. And interesting to hear him say, you know, he wrote a foreword for a book about, you know, Cal State Fullerton baseball as well. Definitely some good stories from Eshelman. And then, of course, you know, great to hear him talk about Adley Rutschman and how much he has helped those young pitchers and how much he's going to continue to help them. Because, you know, we who watch these prospects and people who you know, write about prospects can say all they want about Adley Rutschman. But I feel like the real stuff, you got to hear from the pitchers who have thrown to Adley Rutschman. And that is what Eshelman did. did, you know, for a good amount of time in AAA Norfolk this year. And, you know, he's calling him the real deal, and many players have said he's the real deal, and can't wait for Adley to get to the big leagues. But again, so thankful for Thomas Eshelman for coming on this podcast, and hope you guys enjoyed that chat with the Oriole the last three seasons and a big leaguer in Thomas Eshelman. But we've got one more episode coming up this week. We'll be back on Friday to wrap up the week, and we're going to continue our series looking at the rebuilds around baseball on Friday. Started this series last week as we talked about the Colorado Rockies, and we had the host of Locked On Rockies, Paul Holden, on to talk about the Rockies' current plan and compare it to the Orioles. Well, this Friday, we're going to talk Orioles and Diamondbacks. Millard Shane Thomas is going to be on the pod. He is the host of Locked On Diamondbacks here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And guess what? Those two teams, Arizona and Baltimore, finished with the same abysmal 52-110 record in 2021. We're going to talk about that, how the Diamondbacks got there from being a pretty good team just a couple years ago, and why they were so bad but aren't really in a rebuild at this point. We'll compare it to what the Orioles are doing. That's all coming up on Friday's episode. But until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.